The principal object of the expedition into Abyssinian territory was to scout the three main mountain passes through which any army coming down from the highlands to the relief of Gondar would have to march. The major coombe in the mountain chain was the gorge of the Atbara River. Although the ground on the north bank of this river was precipitous and guarded by sheer rock cliffs, the slope of the south bank was less demanding. The ancient trade route ran along this side of the river. It took Penrod's party almost 3 weeks to reach the mouth of the pass. It rained heavily almost every night, and during the day the rivers and streams were swollen, the ground sodden and swampy. The going was so heavy that on some days they covered less than 10 miles. The Agajirs suffered cruelly from the wet and cold to which they were unaccustomed. Once they reached the Atbara Gorge, they climbed the slope of the south bank, and about 300 feet above the level of the river they came upon a saucer of ground that was hidden from any traveller on the caravan road below. A tiny stream ran down the middle of this hollow. Fresh green grass grew along both banks of the stream. They had driven the horses and mules hard, and Penrod decided to rest them for a few days while he observed any traffic coming down through the pass. Each morning, Penrod and Al-Nur climbed to the lip of the saucer and took up a position in a patch of dense scrub just below the skyline. On the first 2 days, they saw no sign of any human activity. The only living creature were a pair of black eagles who had their eyrie in the cliffs above the north bank of the river. They were curious about the two men and came sailing along the hills on their immense wings to pass close over their heads as they crouched in the scrub. During the rest of the day, they were often in sight, carrying hare and small antelope in their talons to their young in the shaggy pile of their nest. Apart from these birds, the mountains seemed barren and deserted, the silence so complete that the mournful cry of the eagles carried clearly to them, although the birds were mere specks in the blue vault of cloud and sky. Towards evening on the third day, Penrod was roused from a drowsy reverie by another alien sound. At first he thought it might be a fall of rock rattling down the hillside. Then he was startled to hear the faint sound of human voices. He reached for his telescope and scanned the caravan road as far as the first bend of the pass. He saw nothing, but over the next half hour the sounds grew louder, and when the echoes picked them up and accentuated them, he was no longer in any doubt that a large caravan was threading its way down the pass. He lay on his belly and focused the spyglass on the head of the pass. Suddenly a pair of mules appeared in the field of his lens. They were heavily laden, followed immediately by another pair, then a third, until finally he counted 120 beasts of burden and their drovers descending along the riverbank towards the Vale of Gondar. A rich prize! The sight had woken the bandit instincts in Al-Nur, and he watched the caravan hungrily. Who can say what is in those sacks? Silver Maria Theresa's? Gold sovereigns? Enough for each of us to afford 100 camels and 12 beautiful slave girls. Paradise enough! Paradise indeed. Who could ask for more? Penrod agreed, grim-faced. If we lifted a finger to these good merchants, Abyssinia would be thrown into uproar. The plans of the exalted Caliph Atalan would be frustrated, and you and I would be sent to paradise without our testicles, with which to enjoy its pleasures. All things in their season, Al-Nur. Slowly the leading mules of the column came closer, until they were passing directly below Penrod's lookout. Three men were bringing up the rear. Penrod studied them. One was a young lad, the second was short and pudgy, and the third was a powerfully built rascal who looked as if he could give good account of himself in a fracas. As they rode closer still, their features became more distinct, and Penrod almost let out an exclamation of surprise. He checked the outburst before it passed his lips. He did not want to arouse curiosity in Al-Nur. He looked again more carefully, and this time there could be no doubt. Ryder Courtney. His mind had difficulty accepting what his eyes had seen. He moved the lens to the plump figure who rode at Ryder's left side. Bakshit, the fat rogue. Then he turned his lens to the third person, a stripling dressed in baggy crimson trousers, a bright green coat with long skirts and a wide-brimmed yellow hat that seemed to have been designed in anger or in a state of mental confusion. The boy was laughing at something Courtney had said, but the laughter had a decidedly feminine lilt, and Penrod started, then controlled himself. Saffron. Saffron Benbrook. It seemed impossible. He had believed she must have perished with her father in Khartoum. The thought had been too painful to contemplate squarely, and he had pushed it to the back of his mind. Now, here she was, as lively as a grasshopper and pretty as a butterfly despite her outlandish garb.
They are on their way down to Gondor from either Aksum or Addis Ababa.
Al-Noor gave his opinion morosely, still mourning the fortune in camels and nubile wenches that he was being forced to pass by.
They are going into camp, said Penrod,
as the head of the long column turned aside from the route and drew up on a clear, level stretch of ground above the bank of the Atbara. He looked at the height of the sun. There would be at least another 2 hours of light by which to travel, but Ryder was setting up his camp. While the herders cut fodder from the river bank and carried it back in bundles to feed the mules, the servants erected a large dining and sitting tent and two smaller sleeping tents. They set out a pair of folding chairs in front of the fire. Ryder Courtney travelled in comfort and style. Just as the sun set and the light began to fade, Penrod saw Ryder, accompanied by Saffron, who had divested herself of the yellow hat, making his rounds of the camp and posting his sentries. Penrod made a careful note of the position of each guard. He had seen that they were armed with muzzle-loaders, and he could be certain these were filled with a mixture of pot-legs, rusted nails, and assorted musket-balls, all of which would be unpleasant missiles to receive in the belly at close range. Penrod and Al-Noor kept watch on Ryder's camp until darkness obscured it, except for the area in front of the main tent, which was dimly lit by an oil lamp. Penrod observed that Saffron retired early to her small tent. Ryder remained by the fire smoking a cheroot, for which Penrod envied him. At last he threw the stub into the embers and went to his own bed. Penrod waited until the lamplight had been extinguished in both tents, then led Al-Noor back to their own camp beside the stream. They built no fire and ate cold asida and roast mutton. Firelight and the smell of smoke might warn unfriendly strangers of their presence. Al-Noor had been quiet since they left the ridge, but now he spoke through a mouthful of cold food. "I have devised a plan," he announced. "A plan that will make all of us rich. Your wisdom will be received as cool rain by the desert." "I wait in awe for you to impart it to me," Penrod replied with elaborate courtesy. "There are 22 Abyssinians with the caravan. I have counted them, but they are fat traders and merchants. We are 6, but we are the fiercest warriors in all of Sudan. We will go down in the night and kill them all. We will allow none to escape. Then we will bury their bodies and drive their mules back to Galabat, and the Abyssinians will believe that they were devoured by the Jinni of the mountains. We will hand all the treasure to our exalted Lord Atalan, and from him we will win great preferment and riches." Penrod was silent, until Al-Noor insisted, "What think you of my plan?" "I can see no vice in it. I think that you are a great and noble shufta," Penrod replied. Al-Noor was surprised but pleased to be called a bandit. To an Agajir of the Beja, the epithet was a compliment. "Then this very night, in the time when all of them are asleep, we will go down to the camp and do this business. Are we agreed, Abadanariji?" "Once we have been given permission by the Emir Osman Atalan, may Allah love him for ever, we will murder these fat merchants and steal their wares," Penrod nodded. And another long silence ensued. Then Al-Noor spoke again. "The mighty Emir Atalan, may Allah look upon him with the utmost favour, is in Galabat, 200 leagues to the north. How will it be possible to solicit his permission?" "That is indeed a difficulty,"
Penrod agreed. When you have found an answer to that question, we shall discuss your plan further. In the meantime, Moorman Digma will take the first watch. I shall take the midnight shift. You, Noor, will take the dawn watch. Perhaps then you will have time to consider a solution to our dilemma. Al-Noor moved away in dignified silence, rolled himself in his sheepskin, and within a short while emitted his first snore. Penrod slept fitfully and was fully awake at Moorman Digma's first touch on his shoulder, and his whisper, "It is time." Penrod allowed almost an hour for the Uggajeers to settle again. He knew from experience that once they were cocooned in their sheepskins, they could not be easily roused to face the bitter mountain cold. He rose from his seat on the rock that overlooked the camp, and barefooted moved silently up over the lip of the ridge. He approached Ryder's camp with great caution. By this time there was a slice of crescent moon above the horizon, and the stars were bright enough for him to pick out the sentries. He avoided them without difficulty. As Al-Noor had pointed out, they were not warriors. He crept up behind the near wall of Ryder's tent and squatted beside it. He could hear Ryder breathing heavily on the other side of the canvas, only inches from his ear. He scratched on the canvas with his fingernails, and the sound of breathing was cut off immediately. "Ryder!" Penrod whispered. "Ryder Courtney!" He heard him stir and ask in a sleepy whisper, "Who's that?" "Ballantyne. Penrod Ballantyne." "Good God, man! What on earth are you doing here?" A wax vesta flared, then lamplight glowed and cast a shadow on the canvas. "Come inside," Ryder urged him. When Penrod stooped through the doorway, he was astounded. "Is it really you, Ballantyne? You look like a wild tribesman. How did you get here?" "I don't have long to talk to you. I am a prisoner of the dervish and under restraint. I would appreciate it if you'd waste no more time on fatuous questions." "I stand corrected," Ryder's friendly smile faded. "I shall listen to what you have to tell me. I was captured after the fall of Khartoum. I had returned there in an attempt to discover the fate of those who had been unable to escape, especially David Benbrook and his family. I can reassure you that Saffron is with me. We managed to get out of Khartoum on my steamer at the last minute. I've been trying to contact her family in England to send her back to them. But these things take a great deal of time. I know she is with you. I have been keeping watch on your camp. I saw her this evening." "I have been waiting to receive a message from you," Ryder said. "Bakshit met your man Yakub in Omdurman. He told Yakub that Ras Hailu would carry messages between us." "I have not seen Yakub since the day I was captured in Omdurman. He did not tell me anything about a meeting with Bakshit or about this man Ras Hailu," Penrod said grimly. "Yakub has disappeared. I think that he and his uncle, a rogue named Wad Hagma, betrayed me to the dervish. I was able to deal with his uncle, and Yakub is next on my list of unfinished business." "Ah, you cannot trust any of these people," Ryder agreed, "no matter how long you have known them and how well you have treated them." "So you know, then, that David Benbrook was killed in the sack of Khartoum, and that Rebecca and Amber were captured by the dervish and handed over to the Mahdi?" "Yes. Bakshit heard all this terrible news from Nazira when he was looking for you in Omdurman. It's hard to imagine those two lovely young English women in the clutches of that dissipated maniac. I hope and pray that Amber is young enough to have been spared the worst. But Rebecca, the good Lord alone knows what she has suffered." "The Mahdi is dead. He died of cholera or some other disease. Nobody can be certain what carried him off." "Oh, I had not heard. I don't suppose that will change anything. But what has become of Rebecca now?" Ryder's concern was apparent. He made little effort to hide his feelings for Rebecca. "So, Courtney has also had the benefit of Rebecca Benbrook's liberal nature," Penrod thought cynically. "She's had so much experience now that when she returns to London she can turn professional and ply her trade in Charing Cross Road." Although his pride was stung, it did not detract from the responsibility he felt for her safety, or for that of her little sister. Aloud, he said, When the Mahdi died, the two sisters, Rebecca and Amber, were taken into the harem of the new caliph, Osman Atalan.
As he said it, there was a gasp behind him, and he turned quickly with his hand on the hilt of his dagger.
Saffron stood in the tent doorway. She was dressed in a man's shirt, which was many times too large for her and hung well below her knees. She must have been wakened by their voices, and had come from her own tent just in time to overhear his last words. The thin cloth of the shirt was utterly revealing, so that Penrod could not help but notice her figure under it. She had changed a great deal from when he had last seen her. Her hips and bosom were swelling, and her face had lost its childish roundness. She was already too mature to be sharing a camp in the remote African wilderness with a man.
"My sisters?"
Her eyes were huge with sleep and shock. "First my father, and now my sisters? Ryder, you never told me that they were in the harem. You said they were safe. Is there never to be an end to this nightmare?"
"But, Saffron, they are safe. They have not been harmed."
"How do you know that?" she demanded. "How can they be safe in the den of the pagan and the barbarian?"
"I spoke to Amber not 2 weeks ago," Penrod intervened, to comfort her. "She and Rebecca are brave and are making the best of the hard blows that fate has dealt them. It may seem impossible, but they are being treated, if not kindly, then gently enough. The dervish see them as valuable chattels, and they will want to preserve their worth."
"But for how long? We have to do something, especially for Amber. She is so sweet and sensitive. She's not strong like Rebecca and me. We have to rescue her."
"That is why I'm here," Penrod told her. "It is the most incredible good fortune that I stumbled across your path. It must be one chance in a million. But now that we have met, we can plan the rescue of your sisters."
"Is that possible? Abyssinia, where we are now, is primitive and backward, but at least the people are Christians. The Sudan is hell on earth, ruled by demons. No white man or woman can remain there long, with any chance of survival."
"I will be going back," said Penrod. "I can stay with you only a few minutes more, and then I am going to do what I can for your sisters. But if I am to get them out of the Sudan, I will need all your help." Penrod turned back to Ryder. "Can I count on you?"
"I feel insulted that you need to ask," said Ryder stiffly. It was amazing how quickly the two of them could give and take offence, Saffron thought angrily. In these dreadful circumstances, why did they have to bicker and posture? Why were men always so pig-headed and arrogant?
"Captain Ballantyne, we will help you," she promised, "in every way within our power."
Penrod noticed that she used the plural "we" with the proprietary air of a wife. Penrod wondered if she had good reason to do so. The idea was repugnant, despite appearances. Saffron was still a child, and a man like Ryder Courtney would never molest her.
"I can waste no more time," he said.
"I must return to my keepers. If my delicate position of trust with the dervish is not to be compromised, we have much to plan. First, we must be able to contact each other and exchange news and plans. Tell me about Ras Hailu."
"He was my friend and trading partner," Ryder explained. "He used to travel to Omdurman in the Dhow 2 or 3 times a year to trade with the dervish. Tragically, he fell foul of the Mahdi, who accused him of spying for Emperor John. He was executed in Omdurman. I have no other agents in the Sudan."
"Well, we shall have to set up some new line of communication. Do not try to contact me directly, for I am carefully watched at all times. You must try to get any message to Nazira. She is allowed much freedom of movement. I shall try to arrange for a messenger of my own. There are other European captives in Omdurman. One of them is Rudolf Slatin, who was the Egyptian governor of Dongola. He is a resourceful fellow, and I suspect that he has ways of communicating with the outside world. If I am successful in finding a messenger, where will he be able to contact you?" Quickly, Ryder gave Penrod a list of his trading posts closest to the Sudanese border, and the names of his trusted agents there.
"Any message they receive will be passed on to me, but as you can see, I am forced to travel great distances in pursuit of my business affairs. It may take an inordinate length of time to reach me."
"Nothing happens swiftly in Africa," Penrod agreed. "What I will ask from you
when the time comes, is that you make the travel arrangements to get us to the Abyssinian border as swiftly as possible. As soon as we leave Omdurman, the entire Dervish army will be alerted and will pursue us relentlessly. The safety of Saffron's sisters takes priority over everything else, Ryder assured him. Where is the Intrepid Ibis? Penrod asked. A steamer would be the fastest and surest method of getting us to the border. I should not like to attempt a flight on camels across the desert. The distances are enormous, and the going is killing hard on the women. Unfortunately, I was obliged to sell the little steamer. Now that the upper reaches of both Niles have been closed to me by the Dervish, I have been forced to restrict my business activities to Abyssinia and Equatoria. The Ibis was of no further use to me. That is a great pity. But I shall devise another route, Penrod stood up. I can spend no more time with you. Before I go, there is one other important matter. The reason I am here is that Abdullahi is planning to attack Abyssinia and seize all the disputed territories from Gondar to Mount Horia. He's going through all the diplomatic motions of lulling Emperor John with overtures of friendship and peace. But he will attack, probably after the big rains of next year. Osman Atalan will command the Dervish army of about 30,000. His first and main objective will be the passes here at Atbara Gorge and Minktli. His purpose will be to prevent the Emperor coming down from the plateau with his main forces to intervene. I have been sent here by Atalan, may he rot in hell, to scout the terrain over which he will attack. My God! Ryder looked aghast. The Emperor has no inkling of this. Do you have access to him? Penrod demanded. I do, yes. I know him well. I shall be seeing him immediately on my return to Entoto in 3 or 4 months' time. Then give him this warning. I will. Depend on it. He will be grateful. I am sure he will offer his assistance in the rescue of Rebecca and Amber, Ryder assured him. But tell me, Ballantyne, why do you offer him this warning? What is it to you if the Dervish invade this country? Need you ask? Your enemy is my enemy. The evil that is abroad can only be appreciated by those who have witnessed the sack of a city by the Dervish. You were at Khartoum? Ryder nodded. Emperor John is a Christian monarch. Abdullahi and his bloodthirsty maniacs must be stopped. Perhaps he will be able to put an end to these horrors. Penrod turned to Saffron. What message can I take back to Omdurman for your sisters? He asked. Her eyes glistened with tears in the lamplight as she struggled with her reply. Tell them that I love them both with all my heart and always shall. Tell them to be brave. We will help them. We shall all be together again soon. But whatever happens, I still love them. I will give them that message, Penrod promised. I am certain it will be of great comfort to them. He turned back to Ryder and held out his hand. I think we would be wise to forget our personal differences and work together towards our common goal. I agree with all my heart, said Ryder, and shook the proffered hand. Penrod stooped over the lamp and blew out the flame, then disappeared out into the night.